Welcome to the Ladies of Liverpool podcast.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
Ladies of Liverpool.
With Leanne Campbell.
And here we are again. It's Ladies of Liverpool. It's Friday. Or it's not. Depends what day you're listening on. But it does go out every single Friday. Maybe you've waited till Saturday to listen to it. I don't know. But welcome and thanks for joining us whatever day it is. Now, you know, on Ladies of Liverpool, we often talk about finding the good in certain situations, just looking for some kind of silver lining, something positive. Well, I'm going to be talking to one of the most positive ladies I've ever come across. Faced with the horrendous situation of having a young child diagnosed with cancer, Rachel decided to set up something that is very, very positive. So she's going to talk about her times as a mum, as a parent, dealing with one of all of our worst fears. On Instagram, she is the lady behind Diary of an Oncology Mum, and she's got so much to offer at the moment that maybe you can help out with. So if you want to get involved or you just want to sit back and listen to this story from a very, very strong woman, a lady of Liverpool, then that is exactly what you're going to get. This is Ladies of Liverpool, and it's with Rachel Daly.
Ladies of Liverpool.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
Right, Rachel. This is going to be an honest, frank conversation with you, a woman who's been through, I imagine, some crappy times. Can you start at the very beginning for us? How was your life before your little Jack became unwell?
So I grew up in Liverpool 8, and then mum and dad moved over the water when I was about 8. And then when I was 18, I moved to Manchester for university, where I met my husband, Lee. We were together for, about 7 years before Jack came along, and we lived in a little house in Manchester. And we had him, he came along, he was the most gorgeous little boy and just really changed our lives, you know, in a positive way. After a couple of years, Lee and I decided to get married. That was 2014. And it was probably one of the best years that we'd had. It was amazing. We had summer holidays, we had the wedding. So we went away in the April to begin with. And then we went away again in the August. And it was the August that I realised that something wasn't quite right with Jack.
So little Jack's 3 at this point?
Yeah, about three and a half he
and
was.
What did you notice, Rachel?
He'd lost weight, was the first thing, and he was off his food, just right off his food. He seemed to be wanting to drink more than eat. So you'd put his dinner in front of him and he'd start barking. That was the first thing. And then when we come back and I looked at the photos and I compared the photos from April when we'd gone away to August, you could really see the weight difference in him. And he had these like black bags under his eyes, like black rings under his eyes. He just looked knackered all the time. And he was starting in the nursery in that September. We came back in the school that he would have been going to. He had a child mind, and I said to her, there's just something I can't put my finger on, and he's off his food.
Yeah.
She said, well, I'll keep my eye on him and I'll keep you up to date with what he's eating and drinking and all the rest of
and
it.
And all this time, especially with little ones, you come up with your own theories, don't you? You know, they're not sleeping properly, they go off the food, all these things where you try because you don't want to think for 1 minute what's anything about to slap you in the face.
Yeah, exactly. So it went on for a couple of weeks, really, with me thinking there's something, you know, and I spoke to my mum and my mother-in-law and friends and, you know, everyone, again, has their own theories what it could be.
Yeah.
I even had one friend suggest that I'd been dieting for our holidays and for the wedding, that he was copying me.
Oh.
So, you know, everyone's got an opinion,
of course,
with things like that.
Yeah.
And nothing even serious crossed my mind. But at one point I thought, I'm going to take him to the doctors just to get him checked. And I walked in and, you know, he was full of beans, climbing all over all the furniture in the doctor's office and everything.
Yeah.
Didn't look like a child that had anything wrong with him.
So you're sitting there thinking, he thinks I'm a crank now.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what kids do in the doctors.
And I was like, she was looking at him and like looking at me. And I was like, yeah, but
your boy. Yeah.
It's like, whether it's like mother's intuition or what, there was just something. And she was like, well, it's probably just habitual. He's probably just like, you know, it's just a bit of a behavioural thing and it'll pass. Mm-hmm. So fair enough. Come back in 2 weeks. And well, we didn't make it back into the GP's 2 weeks later. About 10 days later, I got a phone call from his child minder. She'd picked him up from there. She was doing like mornings. She said, Rachel, he looks terrible. He looks really gaunt. He could hardly walk out of the classroom. The teacher said he's been like laying in the reading corner and like going off asleep. And so I just flew home from work. I thought, that's it, I'm going to A&E. Yeah. Just taking him to A&E. And again, still didn't really think anything sort of serious.
Because you think with little ones like that, you think meningitis.
Yeah.
All these things that you read about. Yeah, rolling glass tumblers over them.
Yeah.
So you get hold of them. You get to our brilliant Alder Hay.
Well, no, actually at the time, we were living in Manchester.
Right.
So when he was first diagnosed, we were living in Manchester. And we went to Royal Manchester Children's Hospital because it was just down the road from us. We went in and they kind of took him into a side room, and straight away they started asking me if he banged his head. They mentioned this condition called diabetes insipidus was the first thing they said. Right. So you can imagine I've got my phone out and I'm Googling diabetes insipidus and I'm like, never heard of it. It's not the same as normal diabetes. It's related to a hormone called vasopressin that your pituitary gland produces. And she said, look, this isn't the diagnosis. There's a reason why we need to find out what the reason is that he's not producing vasopressin.
Yeah.
So we got admitted into the hospital.
And where's your head at this point?
I was just glad that they'd listen to me, to be honest with you. I was relieved.
A little bit of relief.
That we were in there and they were doing tests and things like
and
that.
And they were going to find out what it was.
Yeah. But all along, there's nothing wrong with him. Like, to look at him, he was racing up and down the ward on a scooter. I felt ashamed half the time because there were some really poorly kids there.
Yeah.
And he wasn't.
The novelty
sick.
Of the doctors or the hospital.
He was made up. They he thought he was it, on holiday. They? And I was like, you know, you're sitting in and you're seeing all the kids coming in, and it was like a roundabout. Kids coming in really poorly, and
was there a point where you're sitting there and you're thinking, this isn't going to be anything too serious? We're going to be back home tonight.
Yeah, the whole time that was my mindset. You know, I was still managing to do work as well. I was work had been fine, but I was still doing work from his bedside and stuff while he was racing around. Then they kept asking me about his head. Has he banged his head? And I was like, he's 3 years old. He's constantly falling and banging his head.
He do, don't he?
And we'd been in the hospital for about 2 weeks. And I was bathing him one night in the big bath. And this lump, like the size of a pea, just appeared on the side of his head. Literally, like from the morning it wasn't there, when I bathed him at night, this pea-sized lump. So I called the nurse and I was like, because they kept going on about his head. I said, this lump's appeared. So they were like, right, we need to book him in for an emergency MRI scan. So that's when you start thinking, right, okay, what do you mean, what do you think it is? And that was the first time they mentioned Langerhans cell histiocytosis. Again, phone comes out, what is that? Never heard of it. How do you spell it?
Yeah.
And then when I started reading it, it was like, this is a cancer-like disease. But again, that didn't register. It was just like, I was just reading about what does it mean? What's going to happen?
Yeah.
So they put him asleep for the MRI because he was three. He wouldn't have kept still. They put him asleep. And they said, you know, we've found three other lesions in his skull.
Mm-hmm.
And his pituitary gland is, the pituitary stalk is swollen. So we think there's disease there. But to be sure, we can't start any treatment until we do a biopsy. So I had to sign all the consent forms and everything for them to do a biopsy on him. And they said, look, we're going to put him asleep again. And while he's asleep, we're going to fit him with a Hickman line because we need to start chemotherapy. And I think that was when it really kind of hit home.
The way chemotherapy
aimed
towards your baby.
Yeah.
And you must have felt like the floor just opened up.
That's it. You just thought.
He's just been on a scooter.
Yeah, he's running around. Like, there was a play therapist at Royal Manchester Children's Hospital. He was a scouser called Dave, and he really took to him. In fact, he wanted to change his name to Dave. And he was fantastic, this fella, and he loved him. He played with him every day. But when we read about the condition and the treatment plan and understood it and stuff, I think we kind of got our heads around the fact that the prognosis was quite good for it, you know.
Yeah.
It was treatable.
Yeah.
And that was the main
what
thing.
A relief,
thought,
yeah.
You know, it's going to be a journey, but it's treatable and we can get there. So they put him asleep and did this biopsy. So he's got a big scar on the side of his head where they took it out, the tissue. And then he started his treatment. And he went from, like, you know, he'd lost loads of weight. He was on really high doses of steroids.
Yeah.
He put loads of weight on. But it didn't really hit home properly until, because at the time we weren't in the oncology ward. We were still in this other part of the hospital while they're trying to decide what's wrong with you kind of thing.
Mm.
And nothing really prepared us for walking into the oncology ward for the first time. I don't think anything can. And we kind of went from the waiting area in to see his consultant. And then from his consultant, he was going into the ward to have his first treatment. And that's what floored us more than anything. We'd been like, we'd been really optimistic and everything. And then you just see all these like really, really sick kids. And, you know, they're in wheelchairs. They've got tubes up the nose, feeding tubes up the nose.
And you're walking through.
You're walking there with a health, what you think is a healthy child, healthy looking child. And you're thinking, this is what he's going to be like.
Ladies of Liverpool.
Rachel, how do you go about telling a 3-year-old you've got cancer?
We didn't, to be honest with you. We made it into a game. That was the way we coped with it. He was obsessed with space at the time, with space and rockets. And so we made it into it. He was going to the hospital to have some jet fuel injected into him so he could go on his space mission.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. And that's what he'd tell all the nurses when he went in.
So did he ever ask, you know, why is this happening? Or
no.
The beauty of when they're so
young. When they're so young, yeah.
Whatever mum tells you is okay, which... When your mum and your little one's not well and you've got that responsibility, that is so hard for me to even try and imagine just the thought of it as a mum. But to come up with something so genius, well done to you.
Yeah.
Bravo.
You know, that was kind of the theme of his treatment and all
that. And he seemed well at this point still.
Yeah, he was, you know, we got told, I think they kind of tell you worst case scenario when you sit down with the consultant. He's going to lose his hair, he's going to be very sick. And whether it was because the way we approached it as a family and our attitude towards it was quite optimistic, and we didn't do the whole, oh, he's really sick thing intentionally.
Yeah.
Whether it was because of that, I don't know, but he wasn't.
No.
He had days where he was on the couch all day and he wasn't well, but no more than any other 3-year-old who's just picked up a bit of a bug at nursery.
Yeah.
And that went on for a year. And he finished his treatment and he rang the end of treatment bell. It was great. It was like a euphoric moment when he rang that bell. But after he finished treatment, and most people who have cancer, adults, kids, whatever, they have to have scans regularly before they're officially kind of signed off and in remission. Yeah. He was under Manchester still and he was having scans every 3 months, and then that went on for a year, and then they were all still clear.
And has he started school at this point?
Yeah, so he was in school and everything else.
And so he's in normal school.
Normal school.
He's doing 9 till 3.
Yeah, full days, just completely well.
And you feel like your life's going back on track? Because I imagine playing, you know, your mum role with your mum hat on and doing everything you can for your little boy in this situation is like massively stressful, emotional. Did you give up work at this point?
No, I was really...
Because you've still got mortgages to pay, and this is what I wanted to talk to you about as well.
It's a massive worry. And for those first 3 weeks when I was in hospital with him before his diagnosis and before we knew the treatment plan, I worked from the side of his hospital bed, but I was receiving on my work email at the time, the company I was working for, I had like an automated system. So if someone wasn't in, you got an automatic email like saying you were off and it hadn't been approved as leave until you'd sat with your manager. And I was getting these notifications every day.
Yeah.
And it was really, that was stressing me out.
Because
I'm like, I didn't know whether they were going to pay me because I just had to ring up and say, I'm not going to be in them in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You don't plan for that.
No.
Even if you have got savings, how long are you going to be off for? And anyway, when we got the plan, his treatment plan was such that, because he was only doing part-time at that time, through the whole of his treatment, he was only in the nursery, I managed to work and just take leave or work from home the odd days when he needed me.
Yes, yeah.
We live next door to his childminder, another scouse out living in Manchester. And she was amazing, and I trusted her, like my sister, and she looked after him as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked really well for us, really.
So you got yourself through it all, financially, emotionally, you know, physically. You get to the end, you ring the bell, he's going for his scans.
Yeah, and he'd had, two and a half years of clear scans. Well, he had a year of clear scans, and then he was going on 6 monthly scans, so to go from 3 months to 6 months, and then from 6 to 12, depending on the progress. But about 18 months after he'd rang the bell, there were some changes on one of his scans, but he had no symptoms, just in his brain, MRI. So they put him on 3 monthly scans and he'd start getting migraines. But again, nothing else. They gave him some treatment for the migraines and he was fine. And then in this time period, I had his little sister, Ruby. I was pregnant. I had another baby.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved from Manchester back
to Liverpool.
Here. Yeah. And we went up to Manchester. I'll never forget the day. I took my dad with me and the baby. And we sat down with his consultant. And anyone will tell you who's been through this process, if there's more than one person sat in the room with the consultant, it's probably going to be some kind of bad news.
Yeah.
And as we walked in, there was two people sat in the room. And
so you knew
I clocked there, and straight away I thought, oh my God. And we sat down, but again, he'd been fine, apart from a little bit pale again, the black rings again, yeah. Just a little bit.
And was Jack not with you at this
yeah,
point?
Yeah, yeah.
So he's in the room
Jack's
as well?
Jack's with me, yeah. Jack sat there and the conversation was always
that
the
protection.
Same.
Yeah. You know that you just want to protect them from everything. You've spotted it.
Mm.
What are they going to say? And his little ears are here.
Well, this is it. And now he's seven. He's
so
not
he's
three
fully
anymore.
Fully understanding
yeah.
it.
And he's a bright kid, you know what
yeah.
I mean? I always let Jack sit next to the consultant and always wait for him to speak before I would speak, because I just think it's happened to him
yeah.
and to sort of empower him. And the consultant said to him, you know, how have you been? Fine, you know, he'd say. And his consultant said, you know, he's been well, there's no changes on the brain part, but we found three new lesions in his skull. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was literally speechless. And he said, I said, is he going to have to start treatment again? He said, yeah. So I said, when? He said, like, soon as possible.
Yeah.
He didn't really understand it, I don't think, what was going on, because he was three at the time, and he's been used to going backward and forward to hospital and stuff, and he knew
yeah.
what his diagnosis was and all the rest of it. But I don't think he really understood properly at that point.
They don't remember from 3 to 7. They won't remember.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and
I
that
know.
Was partly at the time when he was three and he finished his treatment. I was glad that he was only young, because he won't ever remember
yes,
what happened to him.
Because you didn't think for one minute
it was going to happen again.
You were going to go through it again.
No. So then obviously we had to make the decision then. He was going to be on treatment, and, you know, what's the treatment plan? And he said, well, you need to decide where you want his care to be. Obviously, you've moved back to the Wirral now. Do you want to stay here? And I said, well, you know, what's the treatment plan looking like? And when we seen what it looked like, it made more sense to transfer to Alder Hey.
And was it chemo again?
Yeah. So it was eight cycles of high-dose chemo, 4 days a week for 6 months.
Did that affect then, him as little as it did the first
no,
time?
No. It's been a totally different experience.
Ladies of Liverpool. Everything Liverpool. Everything for ladies.
Right, so you find yourself in Alder Hey.
Yeah.
And it's a whole different show now, isn't it? This is an older child who understands what's going on,
yeah,
and different treatment. So talk us through,
yeah,
as a mum, what did you witness?
So he had this time he had a portacath fitted, which is slightly different to a Hickman line, like, comes out of the body and is a bit more restrictive in terms of being able to do sport and swim and things,
yeah.
So the portacath's like underneath, and it only gets accessed when it's needed, really. So we had one of them fitted in Manchester, and then we came over to Alder Hey to meet his new consultant. And we were sitting there on the bed again. I'll never forget the first day that we went there, and it's amazing, the new hospital.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we thought that we had the creme de la creme in Manchester, if I'm honest. But walking into that building at Alder Hey, we were like, wow. And the care is unbelievable. Everybody knows within that oncology team at Alder Hey, everyone knows about Jack.
Yeah.
It's, the consultant obviously leads the care, but it doesn't matter whether it's a nurse or whatever. They've all got a picture of what's going on.
How important is that as a parent?
So important. So
when
important.
Your little one's in this condition.
Yeah. You know, when you ring up and it's not, oh, hang on, I just need to ring so-and-so.
It's personal.
Yeah, it feels much more personal.
It's these little things, isn't it, that as a mum you're going to appreciate.
Yeah.
Because how you go by day in this sad situation.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a worst case scenario for anyone who's got a child.
Yeah.
So there he is, he's back in, he's getting his new rounds of chemo. Did you say 4 days a week?
So, so he'd have it for 4 days, and then he'd have a 2 week break, and then he'd come back and have another 4 days. And it was a push, so it wasn't like a drip. So it was like only looked like a small, like, syringe worth of chemo. And again, we were told what the side effects would be. The first round was fine. He didn't really have a bad effect. The second day, 12 hours after he'd had the chemo, he woke up in the middle of the night, like, with a raging temperature. and vomiting, and we were like, "Oh, oh God, so this is what they meant when they said like he's going to be sick."
Mm-hmm. And you're there, you're staying with them and everything.
Well, we were home, so we've been treated. Home. Yeah, we've been treated as a sort of day patient, really. And then somebody from the community team would come out to give the chemo. So we'd have the first one in the hospital and check his bloods, and then the next 3 days would be at home. That was the plan. But I don't think that happened very often because he'd almost always get admitted back into hospital with a temperature. Because
yeah.
That's one of the things, if they have a temperature, they have to go in and get more bloods done and stuff. But his first day there on that ward, they had somebody from Click Sergeant, which is a national charity, come and have a chat with us and stuff. And he said, "Oh, I can get you a little goodie bag." It's another charity that put goodie bags together for children. He brought it along and it had like Lego in it and a few other bits and pieces. And Jack can obviously read, and he's really switched on, and he noticed in this pack there was a leaflet explaining about the charity, and it said that in memory of this little girl.
Mm-hmm.
He sort of read it and he like looked at me and he went, "People die from having cancer." Honest to God, like when I think of it now, it absolutely guts me. You could see his face.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, sometimes, yeah, that does happen. But like, obviously, that's not going to happen to you.
No, that's not going to happen to you.
And but you want to protect them from that information.
You don't want to lie to them.
Yeah,
because exactly. You want to give them the truth.
Yeah. Just turned 71. But like I say, he's so sort of, and I thought, oh God, this is going to be so much more difficult this time.
Oh yeah, there's questions.
Yeah, yeah. He's going to be a lot more, he's going to have a lot more opinions about what's happening to him, and we're not going to be able to plug him that he's going on a space mission and all that anymore.
Had they given you news that we can treat this?
Yeah.
Did they tell you?
Yeah, it's treatable. You know, what his consultant actually said, his words were, it's a temporary inconvenience.
Yeah.
It's a 2-year protocol that he's going to have to follow. But there are options for him. And, you know, unfortunately with Jack's diagnosis, it has got quite a high relapse rate. It's about 40%. But there are treatment options. But, I mean, he'll be 9 by the time he finishes. That'll mean he's spent a third of his life on chemotherapy by the time he's 9. And it's like...
And you've spent 6 years.
Yeah, backwards and forward and everything else.
This has been your life.
In it, yeah.
Yeah.
We count ourselves lucky because, you know, unfortunately we've met a lot of families whose children haven't survived, and it does happen.
I was thinking it's that on your journey,
reality. Yeah,
you must have made friends with other mums,
and
other parents.
It's absolutely awful. You almost feel like, we call it like survivor's guilt when, if you're an adult that goes, you almost feel guilty that you've got this healthy child, and you know, for all intents and purposes, he is healthy and he participates in sports, and you know, he's dead sociable and everything else.
What treatment is he going through right now, Rachel?
So he takes daily chemotherapy orally. So he's done 6 months of IV chemo, which was like the horrible bit.
Yeah.
That made him quite sick, and he missed quite a bit of school then. And now he's on oral chemotherapy for 18 months, which he'll finish next March. He's having a little break at the moment because his treatment, what his liver's, obviously it takes a bit of a battering with chemo. So he's having a little break just over the summer, and he'll start again in September.
And will he go back to school in September?
Yeah. His attendance has been 80% this year. And that's something that we've worked hard to achieve with the school. So we sat down with the school and made a plan, like a care plan for him and everything. They know what to do. They ring me up if there's anyone who comes in with things like chicken pox.
Because you've got to keep him well, haven't you? Breathe this every second of the day, going to bed, waking up.
Yeah.
It's a constant duty, isn't it? Which any mum has got to keep the child safe and well. But when they're dealing with cancer at such a young age, it's all on you.
Yeah.
The mental health side of it, keeping them positive. And that's what I want to talk to you about, your little campaign that you've got going on and how we can support the positivity.
Yeah.
Ladies of Liverpool.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
So positivity then.
Yeah.
Tell me what it is, first of all.
Okay, so when Jack was on treatment last time, first time round, we wanted to create this positive bubble around him, really, and we didn't want to let any negative energy in because he was doing so well.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously when you say cancer and kids in the same, everyone has the same reaction no matter who we speak to. You don't know what to say.
No.
And, you know, you're instantly, oh, how are you? You're okay.
Yeah.
Are you feeling okay? Well, he was. And he didn't have any sense of feeling unwell because we kept it like that.
So you have to keep, you have to encourage that, feed that yourself.
So, you know, it was difficult. We had to kind of keep him away from certain people and who didn't have that same kind of mindset, really, that we had.
You want him hearing the right things, seeing the right things.
And we didn't want get well soon cards and things like that, because again, that was like, that was the wrong message. I felt like it was giving him the wrong message. So his charm minds are done. Was like, you know, the kids are all missing him in the playgroup. We wanted to make something. So she made this big, massive tree of life painting with all the kids' handprints and footprints. And it was like, we're with you, mate, you know.
Like high fives.
Yeah, all high fives, a big tree. And we called it the positivity tree because it was like, it's a big positive message from your friends that you're going to be all right. And we're all like supporting
and
you and cheering for you.
And you could physically bring this to him and go, look at this.
We've got it in a frame in our house, massive big picture. We called it the positive tree, and then one night me and Lee were like having a drink, and we would say after it had all finished and he'd finished his treatment, we were like, it'd be great to be able to share some of our skills really in like mindset and positivity with other parents and carers that are going through this, because we've sat there on the wards with people and you can see the ones that are struggling physically.
You've done it in body, you've helped people and you've said the right words and you've said the right things. But the beauty of social media now is you can reach hundreds of thousands of people.
That's it.
From sitting on the couch and just passing on your experiences, what you've learned.
That's it.
And what people need to move forward.
That's
so
it.
It's an Instagram page, isn't it?
Yeah, so we've got an Instagram page. And again, it kind of fed from our experiences. Last year when he relapsed, I was just getting ready to go back after maternity leave from having the baby. I thought, how am I going to manage this time? This treatment's a lot more invasive than the first time round. So I made the decision not to go back to work and to stay at home to care for him, basically. And at the same time, an opportunity came up with a Liverpool-based organisation called the School for Social Entrepreneurs, who support people who've got an idea for a social enterprise or a charity or whatever to get started. So I applied for that with the idea of the Positivity, this organisation that would support parents and carers like us from a wellbeing perspective and teach them how to look after themselves and the importance of looking after themselves whilst they've got these caring responsibilities. Yeah. So I applied for that and was successful and started like a startup programme, really. And then as part of that, I've learned about applying for funding and stuff. So we put an application in and got some funding from the National Lottery Community Fund to run a project that's starting in September.
Tell me about that. What's this going to be then? I love the thought that you're passing on all this positivity to people, and it's coming from someone who knows. It's one thing having, you know, a professional tell you how you should be acting, how you should be feeling. To hear from someone who's actually been there, stood in your shoes, and is coming out the other end, giving you real life advice. This is just brilliant.
Yeah.
So well done you for finding the strength to do it.
I think it's important too as well. And you're dead right about having had that lived experience. I think some people get like white coat syndrome with the doctors, and they do an amazing job, but they're there, as far as I'm concerned, they're there to look after the children in this scenario. So I would hate to think that the doctors felt pressured to be wondering, am I okay?
So
that's what we're there
for. You're trying to take pressure.
Yeah.
Oh, that's from the hospital and from the staff there.
Yeah.
And every parent will agree, your kids are safe and well and healthy. You still need sometimes someone to give you the nudge to say, it's okay to look after you.
Yeah.
It's okay to deal with you. You don't have to 100% every second of the day put yourself second. You can allow yourself a moment to put yourself first.
Yeah.
Everyone benefits from that.
And if you don't do it, you'll burn out.
Yeah.
You will. You'll end up being overwhelmed and overburdened, and you will burn out. So from September, we're going to be doing monthly workshops and a monthly support group for any parent and carer, not just people who've got children with cancer in the area, any parent with any child with any condition. We've also been working with Ronald McDonald's House at Alderhay as well and partnered with them. So last week, we did our first monthly supper club. So we partnered with another organisation from Liverpool called Can Cook Kitchen, and they supplied the food, and we set up a load of slow cookers and we served them Italian meatballs and fresh bread and dessert and everything. And it was all free of charge. And it was just for parents who were at Ronald McDonald's House and over at the oncology ward came over to eat together with other parents and just chat.
Fantastic, isn't it? Yeah.
Just because it's expensive as well. It's expensive being in hospital with a kid.
It is.
You don't look after yourself in terms of your well-being, your mental well-being. You don't eat properly. So if we can just give them, you know, a spit an hour or whatever, and that was the feedback people were getting. Do you know what? I've been craving veg, fresh food.
Also
been eating as butties. And it's just giving them that space to sit down and eat together. A lot of them brought the kids in, siblings over. And, you know, they might not have seen, if you're in hospital with your child and you've got other kids at home, you might not have seen them for a while. So it's giving them the chance to just sit together and have a bit of a nice family meal and stuff.
It's wonderful what you're doing, and it seems like you're reaching out to all the right people. But if people are listening right now and they want to get involved, you want to help out, maybe you can offer your services, whether you're a caterer, whether you're a venue and you'd love to help, you know, give up your venue for something that maybe Rachel can organise. If you want to do your bit, I doubt you haven't been touched by listening to this podcast. I know you have been. So if you can pass this on to someone who can help out, where do we find you? We've got to go on Instagram, haven't we, really?
Yeah, so Instagram, The Positivity UK, and Twitter as well. We've got a Twitter page too. I've also, since Jack was diagnosed, been writing a blog, Diary of an Oncology Mum, so you can find any updates about what's been going on with him. There, last September, when it was Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, I shared 28 different stories of 28 different mums whose kids had all been diagnosed. So they're all on there as well, just to get a bit of an idea of the types of things that to look out for and the types of things that are going on for parents like us, really.
Well, onwards and upwards for the positivity. And Lady Liverpool will definitely be supporting you in everything you can do. We need to put our heads together and see what we can do together. But for now, just follow Rachel. You can find her. Look for Positivity first. Or if you want to contact her and you don't want to do it through socials, maybe you're not on any social media pages, just message me direct at ladiesliverpool.com and I'll put you straight in touch. Wishing you all the best.
Thank you, Leah.
And for lovely Jack as well. And we'll speak to you again in the future.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Subscribe now
via the iTunes Store.
Hear more from the Ladies of Liverpool
via ladiesofliverpool.com.